Counsel, you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. My name is Lawrence Romuno. I was just telling the other members that this is the first time I've been here in like 20 years, so I'm sort of new to it again. I represent Franklin Minter and his wife, who were plaintiffs in a slip and fall accident that happened at Popeye's restaurant. And the trial was had back in October of 2006 in Superior Court. And the issues were liability and damages. And the issue that we have here today is only involving liability. This is a situation where my client and his wife went to the restaurant with their three small children. He and his wife testified at trial, as well as the two children, to different aspects of what they saw during this accident or at the time of the accident. He originally gave a statement shortly after the accident about his knowledge concerning the accident and what he saw, and in particular what the janitor, who at that time he did not know his full name, Frank, had told him essentially right after the accident. The janitor came up to him and apologized and basically said that he had been told that there was a spill and he hadn't gotten a chance to spill or to clean up the spill. And this accident involves, of course, the spill that he slipped and fell on, that is Mr. Minter. And so from there, we attempted to resolve the case and we weren't able to. So we filed suit. The defense filed an answer denying the allegation of negligence as well as some other allegations. And that we went through this arbitration hearing. And he testified as well at that hearing. From there, we did discovery and
your
determined
primary
that,
argument, your primary argument, I gather, is that the Superior Court erred in not admitting the janitor's
That is the primary statement. Argument that essentially what happened was is that we went through discovery and determined that it was Frank Rodriguez. And I asked to take the deposition of any employees that knew about the accident, and was told that none were available. So I went through the step of actually subpoenaing Frank Rodriguez and also one other employee. We were able to get service over Frank Rodriguez, but he did not show up. So consequently, later on down the line, we had answers to interrogatories that were answered by an officer of the corporation, which basically one of the answers to interrogatories indicated was asked about the defect and indicated that a customer had told them about the spill. In another answer right below that one, it talked about the fact that they had known about the spill and then...
That was those 57, 58.
Right, yes.
Let's put that to one side for a moment and get back to Frankie's. The exclusion of his testimony.
Okay.
How did that come up procedurally?
Okay. Well, what happened was is they identified Frank Rodriguez as a witness to testify in court, and they identified one of the other employees as well as somebody from management. However, when it did actually go to trial, none of those individuals appeared. In fact, there was no witnesses from the defense concerning liability. I then asked Mr. Mentor questions concerning what the janitor had said to him. And at that point, there was an objection made concerning what was said by this janitor to my client.
It was a hearsay objection.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. And you argued that there was an exception to the hearsay rule, namely an admission against interest?
I argued that, yes, that's
and,
correct,
and
Your Honor.
And the court rejected that argument because Frankie was not high level enough to be able to bind the corporation.
That's correct.
Okay. Was there any other issue relating to his testimony? Or that is your client's testimony about what Frank said?
There was some other argument about whether or not he was a janitor or an employee, but then I think, and I think the defense counsel will agree that he was a janitor or an employee and it was his responsibility to clean it up.
I'm a little confused about what anyone actually testified to before the objection was made. What did the jury hear before the objection was made from a witness about the existence of the janitor and anything the janitor might have said?
As far as the testimony from Mr. Mentor and Mrs. Mentor, they were indicating that this individual janitor was cleaning tables nearby, and essentially he was, after the fall, came up and cleaned it. Well, came up and apologized and cleaned the spill.
They both testified to that in the sense that the jury heard them say that?
Yes, that's correct. But they were, and yeah, they I'm not sure. Yes, they I'm sure Mrs. Mentor said that, that he was wiping the tables, and then after the fall, he came up and apologized, and he said, well, there was an admission made, which was kept out, and then he cleaned up the spill.
So the jury heard that, that someone who was cleaning up the table came up to them and apologized. But,
yes.
But the details of the apology were kept out.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and you're arguing that the details that were kept out erroneously.
The details were kept out because of the hearsay objection.
Okay, and why was that an error?
Because the details of what Frankie said, and also actually there was the wife who was going to, and Mr. Mentor, who would have testified concerning the employees yelling at Frankie about not cleaning it up, was also kept out in another part of it. That, in fact, the judge, the trial.
Okay, you're going off on a tangent.
I know I am. I'm sorry. So basically, the hearsay on Frank Rodriguez was an admission by an employee against the interest of the corporation or defendant that he works for.
Was the trial judge's ruling that it was hearsay because there was no evidence that the person who allegedly apologized wasn't employee? What was the basis of the ruling?
There was some discussion about that, but I don't believe that was the ruling. I think the ruling was, as was earlier indicated, that he, or at least the defense, had argued that he had no authority to make that admission, and that admission was left out. And
no authority to make the admission. Okay.
Okay. And my argument is similar to, as I said, at trial, and as I indicated, that basically the corporation acts through its employees. And so even though the corporation in California, wherever that may be, says to a driver, do not go through a red light, you have no authority to go through a red light, you have no authority to admit that you go through a red light, the question becomes is, can he, well, first, did he go through a red light, I guess, and can he admit that he went through a red light, even though he had no authority to go through a red light and had no authority to make an admission?
In other words, it doesn't matter whether he was a low-level employee without authority to make an admission on behalf of the company, as long as he was an employee acting within the scope of his employment, and therefore, to the extent that he was at fault, the company would also be at fault under respondeat superior.
That's my argument.
Yeah. Mr. Romano, let's turn to the interrogatories. Help us understand the record. You wanted to admit interrogatory number 57. The court said, I'm only going to admit number 57 if we also admit 58, which is what the defense wanted. At that point, did you say, I withdraw my request, or how? What happened? Neither one of them came in, but was that because you objected to the condition? Or what? The record's not clear to me.
I agree, Your Honor. I'm not exactly sure how that came about, but as far as what the judge ultimately ruled, but there was that discussion about me or me wanting to bring in the admission by a higher-up level officer of the corporation that basically said a customer indicated that there was a spill in the dining room. Then the defense said, well, there was some discussion back and forth, but ultimately one of the discussions was, okay, if you're going to do 57, what about 58? And 58 talks about immediately
I understand that completely. I need you to help me find in the record what happened, because there are a couple of ways this could have transpired. You could have said, I want number 57, and there could have been an objection, and the judge could have said, fine, Mr. Romano, you get number 57. so it's in. Then the other side says, I want number 58. You object. It comes in anyway. And then we've got 57 and 58 in the record. But it appears the judge said, if you want 57, I'm letting in 58 also. My question is, did you then say, I don't want 57? Or did you say, that's not fair, or that's not right, or what happened?
Yeah, I understand. I'm sorry, Your Honor. That yes, I did say, no, I do not want 58. And so, consequently, under the judge's ruling, I couldn't get 57. And that's how it was left, that neither of them came in. But yes, I only wanted 57. The judge said, no, I won't give you 57 unless I get 58, or you agree to 58. I wouldn't agree to 58, so I was not allowed to put 57 in.
So the legal issue is, from your point of view, we shouldn't be negotiating the admissibility of evidence. If I was entitled to 57, I should have gotten 57, and we should have treated 58 separately.
Thank you. Yes, Your Honor.
Apparently, the trial judge believed that under the rule of completeness, you getting 57 in without 58 would be unfair to a party. Therefore, it was either both or nothing, correct?
Yes, she did mention that at some point.
Why is that ruling incorrect?
There's a couple reasons. Number one is number 15. First, the defense called no witnesses at all. And so when you then have them allowed to bring in 58, which is an additional evidence without any indication from what the evidence was on the record, from my clients at least, there was no indication of what 58, no support for 58 in the trial record. So that there was additional, that clearly would be hearsay because obviously they're allowed to bring in evidence without any witnesses to testify about it, and more importantly, without me being able to cross-examine any witnesses, because if you look at 58, it's not even clear when the floor was mopped, dried, and the caution signs were placed. Was it before or after? So that it would be confusing to the jury. So instead of completeness, what it would do is actually cause confusion and create other issues in the trial that I would have no way of trying to, other than making an oral argument to the jury, as to what was meant by 58.
I take it there were no requests for admissions sent that, in effect, summarized either what the janitor told Mentor and his wife or that a customer indicated there was a spill in the dining room before Mr. Mentor fell. There weren't those kinds of requests for admissions.
Yeah, there may have been some requests for admissions made because we normally do it on a matter of routine, but I don't, I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Well, if there had been, we probably wouldn't be here on these issues, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're probably right.
Mr. Romano, when at the time that there was an argument before the trial judge about whether or not interrogatory answers 57 and 58 should be coupled or decoupled, did you make the point to the trial judge that there was no factual foundation, no evidentiary foundation for interrogatory answer 58?
Did I make
You've argued to us that the trial judge erred in not decoupling 57 from 58. And the reason is that 58 was basically hearsay testimony with no witness to either give that testimony or cross-examine, or to be cross-examined about it. My question is, was that point made to the trial judge, and if so, where in the record is it?
It was made, but it may not have been made as eloquent as today's. But I believe that I quoted some of my discussion with the trial judge on that issue. Perhaps on rebuttal I can answer that question. I can find it because I don't seem to be able to find exactly what I said. But I do remember making actually, this is the judge and the – I don't have my hands on that right this second, Your Honor. If on rebuttal, yeah. I will.
Even if that is correct and you made that point, isn't it equally true, interrogatory answer number 57? There was no independent evidence of what a customer said. Your clients didn't hear what the customer said, and there was no employee from Popeyes to say what a customer said either.
Except that's an admission on an issue concerning knowledge of the spill. And so I'm saying that's an admission by them. That, in other words, they knew that there was a spill.
Okay. I accept that it's an admission that there was a spill, but perhaps you can help explain that in light of your objection to 58. A spill that occurred when? And was it a spill that was cleaned up before Mr. Mentor fell or wasn't cleaned up until after he fell? How does it explain that?
Because number 57 specifically talks about the plaintiff and the injury. And I think Your Honor is, I think what Your Honor is asking me is, when they answer 57, how do we know that that's before the accident?
Well, I'm comparing its significance and the reason that it's arguably objectionable to your reasons for objecting to 58. And I'm asking you to tell me why, as to in regard to 58, you get to make the argument, but isn't it equally applicable to 57, that it wouldn't it confuse the jury, as you argued, about when the spill occurred, and would it be fair for the jury to hear nothing more than that a spill occurred, not that it was cleaned up at some point?
Because the question on 57, which was a broad question, and in fact the judge had said, wow, that's a broad question, and I had to explain that we're trying to focus in on when the time period is, says, please state whether you or any employee received any complaint, comma, warning or notice of any form, written or verbal.
It does say before the accident.
Yes. Okay. And it's a fairly broad question trying to cover all the verbals. And
yeah, the only thing it doesn't address is whether it was cleaned up after the customer indicated it was there before or after.
That's
the
correct.
Accident. Okay. You want to save the balance of your time for rebuttal?
Yeah, because I want to see if I can find some additional statement. Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. Nancy Cobb on behalf of Metropolitan Restaurants, whom we've been calling Popeyes through this litigation. As I understand the plaintiff's argument, it's essentially twofold with respect to the statements not just of Mr. Rodriguez, the janitor who has been identified, but also of some unnamed and undescribed cashiers. The court record is found at appendix page A7 with respect to what Mr. Ramuno made as a proffer as to what Mr. Rodriguez was going to say. And that's at page, again, appendix A7, which is page 32 of this transcript, where Mr. Ramuno says, we know that it was an individual that was apparently saying he's sorry, and he went and mopped it up. There was no proffer ever made to the trial court that Mr. Rodriguez was going to say anything along the lines of, I should have gotten to that sooner, I didn't get a chance to get to it, or anything along those lines. So what the trial court was ruling upon was a comment that Mr. Rodriguez was going to say he was sorry. And as the objection at sidebar noted, saying you're sorry that something happened is not an admission of negligence. It's not an admission of fault. It's simply a comment. Moreover, in that instance, it is harmless because, as I believe it was Justice Jacobs pointed out to Mr. Ramuno, Mrs. Mentor, in fact, testified that Mr. Rodriguez apologized to them and then went and mopped the spill.
So your representation or characterization of the record is, at the sidebar, Mr. Romano said, I'd like her to be able to say, the person said, Mr. Rodriguez said, I'm sorry, but that had already been said. And the judge ruled, well, we're not going to do that. And Mr. Romano never said that he wanted to elicit any testimony about the timeliness of the response.
Yes, with one slight clarification. The sidebar regarding what Mr. Rodriguez is going to say, which is found at page A7, was in response to a question posed to Mr. Mentor, the primary plaintiff, and that took place before Mrs. Mentor testified.
All right, so my question is, does anywhere in the record indicate that Mr. Romano wanted Mr. Rodriguez, wanted Mr. or Mrs. Mentor to be able to say, in addition to apologizing, Mr. Rodriguez said, I didn't respond in a timely manner?
Not that was in the transcript that I read, and not that I recall, Your Honor, just, right. Justice Hall.
But you agree that if that would have been the issue, that would have been permissible as an exception to the hearsay rule?
With respect to Mr. Rodriguez, I would think that the argument could be made that somebody who says that in that position can bind or can make a comment adverse to it. The example that Mr. Romano used about an employee running through a red light, in most...
Well, no, don't confuse me with this example. let's stick with this case.
Okay.
Because I think if you agree that Mr. Rodriguez, as the janitor, could say, I didn't get here to clean it up, that's fine because that's not our case. But, you know, it helps the court understand the significance of the legal argument because, mm-hmm. quite frankly, when you read the briefs, it was perplexing to the court to understand why that would not have been admissible.
And that, you know, in all candor, Justice Holland, when we try these cases as litigants, more often than not, anything any employee says, you know, and a plaintiff can say, yeah, you know, the Pathmark employee or the Popeyes employee or the Exxon Mobil employee said X. And it's not unusual to be in the situation where you can no longer get your hands on that employee. And it does bring up a very interesting question, given some of the parameters of decisions within more specifically the corporate context, as to what level of employee or agent can bind a corporation by his or her statements or can be an admission against interest. But I do have to agree that within the Superior Court, the trial level, in these types of cases, more often than not, that would be admissible. And I suppose we could debate whether that's a proper interpretation of someone, whether it's within the scope of their employment to make those admissions.
All right. Well, let's just focus on this particular case. Help us. You cited A7. What we need to know is the issue and the ruling. And so what's your understanding of the record on this?
My understanding.
With regard to Rodriguez, what was the issue and what was the ruling?
My understanding is that the issue was going to be the nature and the scope of what anyone with statements that could be attributed to Mr. Rodriguez. What Mr. Romano proffered was going to be said was that he apologized, and the court essentially said you can't elicit what someone else said. The court essentially upheld it on hearsay grounds, somewhat harmless error because ultimately Mrs. Mentor testified to it, and candidly I didn't object to it at that point.
Well, but did the court know Mr. Rodriguez was the janitor?
Yes.
So and my question is, why wasn't that an error to cut Mr. Romano off completely? Why shouldn't he have been able to develop anything that the janitor said to Mr. Mentor?
Well, my understanding of all he was going to establish was that Mr. Rodriguez apologized, and that's what's been in the record, is that he apologized.
I understand that, but if we're looking at the ruling, as I understand your summary, and the court appreciates your help, Mr. Romano said, I'd like him to tell the jury what the janitor said, And the court said, well, I'm not allowing him to tell the jury anything that the janitor said. And my question is, why wasn't that an erroneous ruling?
As I'm looking at the record, it's not clear to me that Mr. Vanner had actually established that Mr. Rodriguez was a Popeye employee, although I'm not going to suggest that he wasn't. We know who he was, and before he left the country, we had some limited communication with him on an investigative level before suit was filed.
So let's go back to my question. I'll make it a hypothetical. Let's assume hypothetically Mr. Romuno said, you know, the janitor came by after the mentors fell, mm-hmm. Mr. Mentor fell, and I want the jury to hear what the janitor said to them. In my hypothetical, the judge says, no, we're not going to let the jury hear what the janitor said to the mentors. My question is, why is that a legally correct ruling?
I suppose that it goes back, Justice Holland, to the issue of whether a janitor can make a statement that binds the corporation. And if we presume that a janitor can, if we presume that the lowest employee can make a statement that is going to bind a corporation.
My hypothetical isn't trying to make some broad philosophical pronouncement. Let's assume in my hypothetical the janitor said, oh my goodness, we've been having problems with spills all week, and we just haven't been able to get to any of them on time, despite our best efforts. Here's another example of us not having enough people to help us out, and now you've fallen. It's so terrible. I'm sorry. Why shouldn't the person be able to say that's what the janitor said?
I'd like the person to have been able to say that. I suspect that under the rulings there, that if you're going to presume and start with the proposition that the janitor can bind a corporation, that the janitor's comments would fall within the scope of his employment, then yes, it would be considered an admission, because it either has to be an admission or it's hearsay. And I think that's where we're starting from. It's either an admission of a party opponent, because Mr. Rodriguez was not a party to this case. So it has to be his statement being used as an admission against the corporation, or it's hearsay.
All right, so if the janitor supposedly said to Mr. Rodriguez, look, I'm really sorry. It's my job to get these spills cleaned up. I just didn't get to it in time. That should have been admitted. That is, that statement attributed to Mr. Rodriguez should have been admitted, correct?
As attributed as an admission against the corporation is the argument that's being made. And, you know, the difficulty with...
I'm sorry, the answer to my question is yes.
Again, and I don't mean to be evasive, because this is something that, frankly, we really struggle with on my side of the V. If we start with the presumption that anything any employee says is admissible against the company or against the parent or against the employer, then yes, the answer is correct.
It's the under this hypothetical, it is within the scope of the janitor's employment to clean up the spill. He didn't do it. He admitted he didn't do it. So he admitted he was at fault. The corporation is the employer. Therefore, under respondeat superior, to the extent the janitor is at fault, so too is the employer. Why, therefore, would not the janitor's admission
be an admission?
Yes.
I think the trial court looked at it slightly differently and asked whether or not the statements that they weren't the statements attributable to Mr. Rodriguez, but attributable to unnamed employees, could bind the corporation. I think in the hypothetical,
that's a separate issue, isn't it?
It is a separate issue, and that's where the court was going on that issue.
Well, let's change the scenario and have a truck driver, you know, who's involved in an automobile accident, and right after the accident, the truck driver says to the other person in the accident who's injured, something that explains the accident, and it deals with the truck driver not paying attention. That would normally come in, wouldn't it?
The reason that would normally come in, Justice Holland, is that the truck driver is ordinarily also a party to the litigation, and the claim would be against the actual driver as well as his employer. In this instance, there's no claim being made directly against Mr. Rodriguez, that it was solely Mr. Rodriguez's actions that caused Mr. Mentor to fall. That's really an important distinction, because whatever the truck driver said can be imputed against the truck driver as well. And there
but
is some.
You wouldn't suggest that you would be able to ask the jury for a limiting instruction that says that statement is admissible only as to the truck driver and not as to the liability of the company that owned the truck.
No, but you would almost invariably have the truck driver there to explain it. And in this instance, Mr. Rodriguez is not available. He's left the country, and we can't find him.
Let's assume, contrary to your position, that it was error for the trial judge not to admit into evidence the statement of the Mr. Rodriguez, or attributed to Mr. Rodriguez through the testimony of Mr. Mentor. Mm-hmm. Would you agree or not agree that error is reversible?
I would disagree that it's reversible, and I'll explain that to the court. And thank you very much for your question, Justice Jacob, because it's something I meant to say. The standard for determining, or in a premises liability case, is whether the business owner had actual or constructive notice. And if you show either actual or constructive notice and failure to take reasonable steps, then there can be liability found. In this instance, presumably, although it's not on the record and it's the plaintiff's burden of proof, presumably Mr. Rodriguez's statements were going to be used to show actual notice of a condition. But regardless, both Mr. and Mrs. Mentor testified that Mr. Rodriguez was in the general area, that he had a mop and a bucket with him, and I believe it was Mrs. Mentor who testified. The Popeyes restaurant is small, and when her husband fell on his fifth trip past this area, that Mr. Rodriguez was between 4 and 5 feet away from the location of the incident and presumably what they now have described as dark liquid on a white floor.
I'm sorry, you're giving a very detailed factual answer, but I'm not sure what the point is.
The point is that would be constructive notice, Justice Jacobs.
I'm sorry, that the plaintiff had constructive notice or the employer didn't?
That would be an argument that Popeyes had constructive notice of what Mr. Mentor now claims is a defect that existed for some period of time.
But why would that render the hypothetical error, not harmless? Your standpoint.
The standard, in order to prevail on liability, if the jury so finds, is a requirement that the business owner have either actual or constructive notice. So by putting on evidence of constructive notice, Mr. Ramuno and Mr. and Mrs. Mentor could have prevailed if the jury had concluded that Popeye's actions were negligent.
May I go back to basics for a moment? Before the issue arose and the objection was made and the trial judge made the ruling that a witness could not testify to what the janitor said, what had the jury already heard from either Mr. Mentor or Mrs. Mentor about the existence of a janitor or that a janitor said anything about a spill?
They hadn't heard yet from Mrs. Mentor, Chief Justice. They had heard from Mr. Mentor, and I'm looking for the site.
Well, I have A7 and A12.
Right. And at that point, they had heard that there was identified as Frank, the janitor, and Mr. Mentor explained that he used to work at McDonald's, so he thought it was a crew person. Someone goes in and they clean the crew area. And he was the one, being Mr. Rodriguez, that mopped up the spill. And the response was afterwards, yes, sir, afterwards. And he mentioned that he was sorry. Did he tell you why? Answer, yes. After my wife and the elderly woman helped me back to my seat and I was sitting there, everyone in the restaurant was just watching. And that's when...
And the jury heard all that?
Yes.
And then the next question was, what did Mr. Rodriguez tell you, or words to that effect?
There was actually no question as Mr. Mentor was wrapping up that answer because there hadn't been a direct question. I asked to approach sidebar and asked for a proffer of where we were going.
All right, and then after that ruling that we now know quite a bit about, Mrs. Mentor testified.
Correct.
What did the jury hear her say about the janitor?
That she saw him, that he was in the area, that when Mr. Mentor fell and after Mr. Mentor came back to the table, that Mr. Rodriguez came over and apologized.
Okay, but nothing about what the jury heard would indicate when Popeyes was on notice that there had been a spill.
No. Not from Mr. or Mrs. Mentor, no. Now, they did hear evidence that Mr. Mentor came in, the party sat down, he went up to the counter, and he drew it on the diagram, walking right past the area where he fell, waited at the counter for, in his words, an inordinate amount of time. I can't remember at what point he said 10 minutes and what point he said 15 minutes, but got some food, went back to the table, realized they didn't have something, went back to the counter, waited another 10 or 15 minutes for whatever it was that he never did get, went back, and I can't really remember because there was a discrepancy between the arbitration testimony and the trial testimony whether there was yet another trip in there. But at least on the fourth or fifth time back past this area was when Mr. Mentor fell. And he said he did not observe any of this, you know, anything, this dark liquid on the light-colored floor on any of his trips.
And what are we to conclude from that?
Well, Chief Justice Steele asked about what the jury knew about when Popeyes would have been on notice, and I think we can conclude from that either Mr. Mentor, it was there and Mr. Mentor didn't see it.
Or it happened between the fourth and the fifth trip.
Correct. And I see that my time is up. If the court has no other questions, I'll sit down. Thank you.
Mr. Romano?
First, to answer the question about the interrogatory, if I may, in the appendix A18, it starts on page 5, Your Honor, where I discussed with the court about the interrogatory answer. And actually, I guess I should have included page 6 and 7 because there's further discussion between me and the court. And the
appendix 6 and 7?
Yes, 6 and 7. And that's in the partial transcript of the trial legal hearing. I only included page 8, which is A18.
But so you're now telling us about something that's not in your appendix? Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. Right. It's in the transcript, but I didn't include it in the appendix. Right. Well, my discussion back and forth with the court.
Send the letter to the clerk with those pages.
I will.
And send a copy to Ms. Cobb.
Thank you. And ultimately what the court said is, I'm going to keep this simple. This is excluded. I won't permit it. Let's put this. Can I take this document and put it in the record? And that was that discussion. The issue is this notice, because we had a janitor who was apologizing, and I wanted the jury to hear why he was apologizing and that he knew that there was a spill and that he didn't have time to clean it up. In addition to that...
Was that proffered in
that
those
was
words?
Not, no one at the trial, in the middle of the trial, I was just reading through this to see how that all came about.
Is the sidebar reported? Can we read this sidebar somewhere in the record?
Yeah.
What are the pages?
It's on page 31, 32, 33, 34, 35. It's interrupted because there was different reasons why there was an objection made. And, in fact, when I went back and said to my client, Mr. Mentor, okay, let's talk about the cashiers. What were they yelling to the janitor? The court said, excuse me. And then we went to another sidebar, and I says, Your Honor, I must have misunderstood what you had originally said. And there was further discussion.
Okay. Your time's up, but so I'm not confused about pages from what? 31 through 35 is the transcript, not your appendix, correct?
Transcript of Franklin Mentor.
But are those pages in your appendix?
Yes, they are included in the appendix.
Okay, how about the appendix page? Because we have that.
A10, A11.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, counsel. I will recess to take the case under advisement.